the cherry on top for CEOs to say, we are getting the hell out of Seattle, somewhere safer, right, somewhere cleaner, somewhere where there's actually some law and order so we can do our business.
Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. Today is July 7th of 2020, and we are talking about the dismantling of CHOP, the reason why the city was taken over, and how anarchy comes into play with all of this.
Yeah, that's a lot of different angles to this story.
There is, isn't there? I mean, it's actually quite complex. It's much more complex than, oh, a bunch of anarchists just took over our city. There's way more moving parts than that.
Absolutely. Definitely an interesting story.
It is. We'll never really know the whole truth. We can only speculate.
Right.
Yep. So I think we're all familiar with the Chaz CHOP saga, and it's finally been dismantled, which was surprisingly peaceful.
Yeah, I think that could have been done at any time.
Oh, totally. It could have never happened. Could have been prevented. But even if it did happen, they could have stepped in at any moment. And they were not, from what I understand, the police weren't armed. They just had billy clubs. And they basically just moved in and said the party's over, and Antifa moved out.
Right.
So it's like, why did it take, how many weeks did it go on? Almost 2 weeks, I think. Maybe longer.
Yeah, I think it was longer than 2 weeks.
I think it was. It was a long time for a city to be occupied.
What I really find the most interesting is, did you hear this part about the story where the people were, you know, walking up some private road, and the guy and his wife came out with guns and all that? Did you catch that part?
I actually didn't hear that story.
Okay, well, it's kind of a side story, but there was a large group of protesters, and they were actually trying to get to the mayor's house, and they ended up in this private gated neighborhood. It's probably a whole nother story about the people, the homeowners with guns defending the property. But anyway, that happened. They were headed to the mayor's house. And then we've got the part of the story that we're going to touch on in a little bit about the lawsuit. But these two events happened within like a 24-hour period of each other. And then like 48 hours later, the cops are moving into CHOP.
Of course.
You know, so
once they start threatening the rich people, right, the party's over. That's right. Was okay when, you know, Main Street and Joe Blow and, you know, lower to middle class earners were getting hit hard and their property destroyed and businesses shut down. But the minute they start walking on the rich people,
right,
that's it.
It's the summer of love until you walk down my street.
Yeah, exactly. Which I find hilarious that the mayor, Jenny Durkin, I mean, she went on live television and said, oh, this is just one big block party. It's the summer of love. And then you look at the aftermath of the city, and it is, I mean, it looks like a war zone. It's just disgusting how they defaced people's property.
Yeah. And another interesting point, too, is how quickly they started cleaning that place up.
Like, oh, really?
Like I saw a walkthrough, some guy doing a video walkthrough just a couple of days after the police went through there. And I don't know how they did it. I really don't. I don't know how they got in there so fast and cleaned up graffiti.
Really?
I mean, it looks like, and I don't know, but it looks like buildings were painted, like repainted within just a day or two.
Well, they'd have to repaint. Yeah. Wow.
But
it just makes you wonder, like, for them, it just seems planned to me. I mean, the whole thing seems planned. And we'll get into that in a little bit later in the episode. But for them to be able to clean it up like that, like, they were prepared with paint cans and a crew. I mean, that's a big deal. 8 city blocks, millions of dollars of damage to be cleaned up overnight. You know, it's just a, that's a bizarre thing to me, don't you think?
It's really bizarre. And I think it kind of stems from the city council. I'm not sure there if the mayor is appointed or elected. I'm not sure which structure they have in Seattle, but either way, you know, the constituents of the politicians in that city are liberals.
Oh, yeah.
And
very left wing.
Yeah. So that makes, when you take that into consideration, it makes sense that Durkin makes a comment about the Summer of Love and it being a block party, because she's got to support that cause. She can't be outspoken against that cause because of her constituents. And then as it progresses and they see that this isn't a summer of love and that it's violent and these people are destroying both public and private property, they know that when this thing comes to an end, they've got to get in there and clean that up and try and spin the story.
Yeah, they got to spin it as hard and as quick as they can.
Right. So they were completely ready for a massive cleanup effort.
Yeah. Oh, they were on standby. They were on standby.
Sure.
For sure. Another interesting thing going on is there are a lot of multi-billion dollar companies now moving out of Seattle because of this particular event, which I'm pretty sure that was already in the works, because if you look at the history of Seattle and how far down the spiral it is right now, this has probably been a long time coming, but this was like the cherry on top for CEOs to say, we are getting the hell out of Seattle, somewhere safer, somewhere cleaner. Somewhere where there's actually some law and order so we can do our business.
Right.
It almost seems to me like we're going to be seeing, you know, empty skyscrapers soon in Seattle.
Well, and I can completely envision in my head a scenario, something like this. So, you know, Texas has been recruiting business for a long time. Texas has been stealing companies from places like New York and California and Seattle, enticing them to Texas because Texas is so much favorable to corporation.
Yeah, pro-business.
Yeah, and I can just imagine someone in the Texas government calling up this CEO and saying, see, you know?
I told you so.
Yeah, we've got a vacancy here for you right now. You can start moving Tuesday.
Yeah, hey, you got a multi-billion dollar company? We have a multi-level sparkling high-rise in Houston or Dallas.
Yeah.
Ready to go. And we have lower tax rates and we're, you know, business friendly.
Right.
Yeah. So they've probably been getting lured, like you said, this whole time. They've been getting lured to, hey, come down here. And then Seattle lets some debacle like this happen, and they're like, yep, okay,
yeah,
we'll just push that button now.
Yeah,
exactly. And on top of losing the multi-billion dollar companies and, you know, turning your city into a shithole, there's also from what I've heard, several lawsuits being filed, but in particular there is a class action lawsuit that the businesses and the people who live there, their constitutional rights were violated.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch play out, too, because suing a local government is not easy to win a case against government. But I think they've got a pretty strong case after looking at it, because they're claiming the collusion side.
Mm-hmm. More of a collusion of the city with this takeover.
Right.
Like, they allowed it to happen, basically. They were colluding with them. They had bathrooms installed. They're the ones who put up the barricades. They're the ones who called it the Summer of Love block party. I mean, so many things that make you realize this was planned. This was an effort between this group. I'm not sure if it was exactly started by Black Lives Matter or Antifa, or kind of a mixture of both, and the city.
Yeah.
You know?
I think they have a chance, really. Whereas when I first looked at it, I thought, you know, you can't sue the city because they didn't protect you. It never works. Nobody ever wins that case. It's been tried too many times. But then when you read the class action lawsuit, which we can link in the show notes,
it's quite interesting, actually.
Yeah.
There's photos in this document. What they've written about is, it's actually an interesting read. Usually this stuff is pretty boring, but I'd suggest checking it out. And yeah, we'll leave a link in the show notes so you can check it out too. You can download it.
Yeah, it's just a PDF, right?
Yeah, but it's a downloadable PDF, yeah.
I also found it interesting that in that complaint, the people that are making the complaint are saying, we don't have anything against the protest. You know, like, that's fine.
They make that very clear.
Yeah.
They make it very clear. We didn't have anything against these people and these protesters. We have, our beef is with the city.
Right.
That they allowed these people to wreak pandemonium in our area, on our businesses, on our homes, and deface them and graffiti them. That's freaking against the law.
Well, not that they just allowed it, because they can allow it, but they helped them. That's the key.
Yeah.
When they make a claim that you colluded with them to do this.
Interesting.
I think that's what will, and I think the icing on the cake for the proof of that is going to be Durkin's stupid comment. Like, I think that's going to really come
shot
back
herself
to
in
her.
The foot on that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I mean, that was the dumbest thing to say. Just hearing her say it, like, makes me cringe. Ugh.
Right.
I shuddered when I heard that. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Because while she's saying this, you know, there's citizens with cameras on their phone posting all this to YouTube of people walking around with masks on and guns and acting threatening and beating each other up. Spray painting, defacing, breaking. It wasn't peaceful at all. I think maybe during the day it was more peaceful, and at moments it was more peaceful, and probably towards the beginning too, you know?
Right.
But when all their little shiny ideology started wearing off and the ugly reality of humanity starts kind of like coming through, you know, that quickly dissipated into chaos.
Yeah.
I mean, people were killed. If this was so, and that's why that they really had to start taking it down, because of the killings. I believe there was 4 murders.
Yeah, I don't think that's what did it. I think it was the class action lawsuit and marching up the mayor's street. I think that's when she said, oh, we got to do something about this.
Yeah, you're probably
this
right,
is getting actually. Out of control.
That's the sad truth. That is the sad truth. It's not that the fact that citizens were being shot.
Yeah, 16-year-old killed.
Yeah, a 16-year-old black boy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure all of them were black. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm almost positive the majority of the people killed were black.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, except for that last one was definitely reported as a 16-year-old black male.
Yeah. So, you know, the paradox of that is astonishing, of what these people stand for, but then what their actions really are in the long run. But yeah, it is sad that you made that point, because you're probably right. It was not the violence and the killings. It was the fact that the rich people started getting threatened and the city started getting threatened with a lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably what it was. And you're right. It is sad. And then, you know, the idea that it's BLM being a large part of this and then shooting those kids. I don't know. That I saw an interview with the young man's father that died in that last shooting, and he specifically blamed BLM. He said, I'm not going to get it exact right, but something to the effect of BLM, you're killing your own. This is your fault.
Yeah. Yet we're not allowed to talk anti-BLM, and they are now taking down YouTube channels left and right for quote unquote hate speech if you talk shit about BLM. Like, you are not allowed to have a bad opinion about them right now. It's just totally insane.
I'm not a big fan of censorship of any sort.
Yeah. You know, people are being censored, like, very heavily right now.
I think you ought to have the right to say whatever you want to say. You know? Even if it's
hateful. Well, isn't that a part of our Constitution?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's part of our Constitution.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in there.
Last time I checked. Pretty sure it's in there.
Pretty specifically,
even. I think it's in the top 2, isn't it?
I think you're right, yeah. Doesn't require much translation either, you know.
No, I think the language is pretty freaking clear. But there is a massive censorship movement that I would like for us to discuss in a later episode of how we're being censored. And the reason it's allowed to happen is because the people doing the censoring, it's on their private platforms. So, you know, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, guess what? Those are all private companies.
Yeah.
They're private companies with a monopoly.
Right.
But they are private companies nonetheless, so they do have that choice to censor people.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that the Antifa crowd support this censorship, which is a fascist act.
That is bizarre. Yeah,
censorship is a fascist act, and the anti-fascists support it. It's just...
it's inverted.
Uh-huh.
Just like everything else in this world, it seems. Things just seem to be inverting right before our eyes. It's really kind of a bizarre phenomenon of our human history right now.
And those are the kind of things that make me think there are these groups like BLM and Antifa. It just makes me think that there's a group behind them pulling their strings that has an agenda that doesn't really mesh up with what BLM really stands for and what Antifa stands for. I think they're being used and manipulated behind the scenes. And I have no proof of that. It just seems, you know, why would Antifa support fascist activities?
That's a good question. Antifa, anti-fascist.
Yeah.
But if we don't agree with them, then they're like crying, you know, crying all over the place and graffitiing all over the place because people are not agreeing with them.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird.
Crying that their voices aren't being heard while supporting the censorship of voices that speak out against their actions.
Yeah, that's quite the paradox. But I did want to talk just a smidgen about Antifa, because the origins are very mysterious, and it's a very gray area of what Antifa really is.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, Antifa is not an organization. And they say that very clearly. They do not have a leader. They do not have a plan. They do not have an organization. People don't donate to them, et cetera, et cetera. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that is the foundation of Antifa. And Antifa got started in a reaction to Mussolini in the 1930s. So this fascist regime took control, and then the natural reaction of human, you know, of being a human is to be anti-fascist. And that's how it all started.
Right.
So it's more of a, Antifa is more of a phenomenon of like the human psyche as opposed to a group or an organization. And it tends to go away once the fascist regime loses control. It doesn't keep perpetuating.
That's interesting. Maybe since they're not an organization and they don't have any hierarchical structure, maybe that's why there's so much conflicting information out there about them, because anyone can just say, I'm Antifa. And maybe your views jive with Antifa and maybe they don't. But since there's no organized structure, anyone can just make that claim.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I'm anti-fascist.
Yeah, I think everybody
I think we're all a little bit anti-fascist. And that would technically, you know, looking at history, we would be Antifa, kind of.
Right.
In a way. The essence of Antifa. It's more of an essence of humanity. Neo-Antifa, maybe another story. You know, this generation might change that. But I think it's important that we at least acknowledge that Antifa only comes around when there is a fascist issue. So there must be some issue here at play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There must be some fascism going on just for the group to have come out. And it's interesting because the movement gained prominence in August of 2017 when the white supremacist group Unite the Right had a rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. And that's when Antifa rose again, very recently.
This modern version.
The modern Antifa can basically be pinpointed to the Unite the Right rally.
Okay.
So that's just kind of a quick thought on what I have researched and found Antifa to be, or at least where it came from. I can't say if that's what it is anymore.
Right. Well, we were talking earlier, too, about doing a whole episode just on Antifa. So that'll be interesting.
I'd really like to, because the history is very interesting. It's based off of, you know, Mussolini and Hitler and Germany. And there's just a lot of really interesting, rich history there that, you know, I think the group, I can't even call it a group, the movement is very positive. At least it was back then. And I think today, you know, I'm sure it's still positive in certain ways, but it's supposed to be more non-aggressive than I think what it's been turning into.
Yeah, I think.
And their view on the non-aggression, or the aggression, I should say, mm-hmm. is some take it to the extreme and they feel that they have to be aggressive in order to prevent the fascist from rising. And if they don't use the aggression to prevent fascism from rising, then they are basically doing everybody a disservice. So they feel obligated to turn to violence. Not all of them, but the more extreme ones do. That's why they do it.
Well, and I find too, when I talk to people about their beliefs and ideologies, it's really easy to step outside of consistency when you mm-hmm. when you have an ideology that, like, what I mean by that is, an example would be like Christianity, which mm-hmm. I'm not bashing Christians here, but one of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not kill, but history is filled with Christians killing other people in the name of their religion. You know, yep. that's not consistent. So, and that's a, you know, that's a human flaw.
Yep.
We can talk about the use of force. And if you have a belief that the use of force, like for me, for example, the use of force is only to be used in defense. And I've had to yep. think about that pretty deeply. And run scenarios in my head. Well, what about this? And what about this? And I've eliminated things like retaliation as a use of force that I wouldn't engage in. Someone wrongs me, and at the time that they wronged me, I was unable to defend myself. And let's say that, you know, they beat me down and beat me up. Well, I missed my chance to defend myself. I can't go retaliate. That's an act of aggression.
Yeah, and that's against human nature, for sure.
Right, and it's hard to stay consistent within your beliefs unless you make really conscious efforts to think them all the way through. And so when you have a group like Antifa that uses fascist activities to support yeah. their you know, they're just not, it's not that they're bad or anything like that, they're not thinking it all the way through.
Well, and it's just human nature.
Right.
Especially with, you know, young people that probably have less self-control and act more impulsively.
Yeah.
Which I think we can all say we acted a little more impulsively in our teens and 20s than we're doing in our 30s, 40s, 50s.
Absolutely.
Most of
yeah.
us.
I mean, I'm a completely different person today than I was in my 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think the same things, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing how we evolve. So I'd like to go on to the next topic, which is, you know, how was this allowed to happen? How was Seattle just allowed to be taken over by technically hooligans and occupied for several weeks? And then they just come in and, okay, guys, time to move out. And they move out
mm-hmm.
peacefully, you know. How was this allowed to happen? And I think I might have figured it out.
Lay it on us.
Oh, I'm gonna. So I want to point everybody to a documentary on YouTube, and it's called Seattle is Dying. It's extremely cringeworthy. It's very sad. It's shocking and appalling. And you may not even be able to get through the whole thing. I know I had a hard time stomaching the documentary. However, it is shining the true light on what has been going down in Seattle for years. And basically, the cops for the past several years have been neutered by the city to not enforce law mm-hmm. is what it boils down to. So homeless people are allowed to put their tents anywhere to sleep, to put their broken down RVs. They can park them anywhere to sleep. This can be in front of businesses. This can be in front of homes, parks, anywhere, anywhere the homeless want to be, they are allowed to be. And there is also a massive drug problem in the homeless community there. So it goes hand in hand. And the police are not allowed to enforce people using drugs. They're not allowed to arrest people using drugs unless it's over a certain amount. And the amount is very high.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a situation where police have been told to stand down, basically. And it's quite shocking.
Right. And even when the police do make some kind of arrest, many a times that person, once they get to court, nothing happens to them anyway. So the cops just stop making arrests altogether because judges are either completely dismissing the case or giving people just slap on the wrist, right?
Pretty much, yeah. They're just dumped back onto the street. So this officer puts their life at risk to arrest a person that is probably unruly, probably acting crazy, dangerous, whatever, contains them, and then within 24 hours are back on the street.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you feel about that if you were a cop?
Yeah, no doubt.
It'd be very demoralizing.
Right. And I know that, you know, I'm not for police departments, but if you're, mm-hmm. if you've structured your community around law and order being enforced by policemen, then that's mm-hmm. the way it's got to be. You can't neuter them after you've said mm-hmm. law and order is only enforced by the police.
Exactly. That is the system that they designed and developed, and now they are literally reneging on that system.
Right.
And
so this is what you get.
Is happening.
Yeah.
Exactly. The consequence is complete pandemonium. Criminals are running around everywhere, doing whatever they want. They are repeatedly shoplifting from the same store over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And the store owner is calling the cops. The guy gets arrested. He's let back out, and he goes into the same store and keeps robbing the store.
Right. Openly. Like, yeah.
Openly.
It's not even, they're not trying to hide it. Just walk in, grab stuff, walk out. And I think I had even heard one of the store owners say that, you know, the judge will tell them that they're not allowed to go back to that property. Like, they're banned from it. There's a term for it, and I forget what it is. But mm-hmm. that's private property that you're not allowed on anymore. It'd be trespassing if you showed up. And then they just show up, and there's nothing, nobody does anything about it.
No one enforces it. And there's one point in the documentary that really struck me. And there's a man who's, like, gloating about how he has defeated the system.
Right.
Because he keeps dodging getting arrested.
Yeah.
And he's out there acting the fool, high on drugs, crazy. And he's in a trash can.
Yeah.
And he's spitting on cops. He's threatening cops. He's screaming at the top of his lungs. And one of the cops is like, "Hey, Travis, do you want a candy bar? Will a candy bar make you feel better?" Like,
yeah.
Like, he's a spoiled child throwing a temper tantrum, and the cop is, instead of tasing his ass, which is what I do, I'm like, "You're spitting at me and you're coming to me aggressively. I'm going to tase your ass."
Right. And the only tool in his tool belt is bribery.
A bribery. That's what it's boiled down to. It's so messed up.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I'd say the point here is that the police officers have been primed for this to happen. And I can guarantee you the Antifa movement, a large portion of it was probably a lot of these homeless people that have taken over the streets. So when these cops have been conditioned to stand down to homeless people and they're coming in to take over a police station, they're literally like, "Okay, you can have it. Let me just gather my computer and let me shred some documents before you take it over." Like, mm-hmm. that's literally what happened.
Yeah.
So us out here in the country, like, I'm in Texas right now, and I'm from Montana. Mm-hmm. If that was to ever happen in Texas, their asses would have been annihilated. Because that is literally, like, that's an invasion. They yeah. invaded. They were, and they said they were a different country. So there was a different quote-unquote country invading the police station. If that happened in Texas, you know, they probably wouldn't have walked out alive, to be honest.
Yeah, it would be another story on the news about white cops killing black people.
Yeah, it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And then, you know, being that our mainstream media is all controlled by six giant corporations that are all leftist. They're all liberals. They would have spun that so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy situation that's been forming where
it is crazy.
And I don't know all the numbers except to say that it doesn't seem to me when you look around the country that white cops are killing black people all the time. I mean, yeah. It's probably not very popular to say, and I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, and I'm not saying that there aren't racist people out there, because there are.
Would be the unpopular opinion, but it is...
I would be interested just to see if I could find what the real numbers are, because I'm pretty sure police departments keep pretty strict records about when somebody gets shot. It probably wouldn't be that hard to find out exactly what the numbers are. How likely are you to get shot by a white cop if you're a black male? And, you know, how likely are you to get shot if you're Caucasian? Those I'm sure those numbers are out there, and I'd be interested to know.
I'd be interested to know, too. Maybe that should be another episode.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to look at statistics and see what the reality is. I do know that, you know, like in Chicago, there's black-on-black crime just out the wazoo. And they're killing each other off, basically.
Yeah. Well, and obviously in Seattle, too.
Yeah. I mean, it just happened in Chaz.
Yeah.
CHOP. But we're not really, I don't see much about it, you know? I'm not really seeing that these deaths in CHOP are being talked about very much because it doesn't fit their narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just this massive propaganda going on.
It seems that way to me.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. Which is what, you know, our forefathers, like, fought to get rid of. Or fought against, you know, for us to have free speech and to get rid of the propaganda, the dogma of the queen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the whole, that's like what's kind of started the whole thing, at least a part of it.
Yeah.
But I found it interesting, and I'd really like for anyone listening to at least watch that documentary, even if you watch 10 minutes of it, and it'll make very clear sense of how this was allowed to happen.
Yeah, it's tough to watch, and you're right, you don't have to watch the whole thing to get the idea.
Well, Seattle is trashed. Oh my God, I've never seen anything like that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a dump hole. It was astonishing to me that a city could fall into such dismay because cops are not allowed to enforce cleaning up the streets. So these business owners have to see and smell trash.
Mm.
I'm talking filth on their streets, and the cops could not enforce it to be cleaned up. It's unreal.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising that business has stayed as long as it has.
Yeah. I think it's kind of one of those situations where it's a slow boil, where it probably... Well, Seattle used to be known for how clean it is and how beautiful of a city it is and how safe it is.
Right.
From the 70s, and then over these past 30, 40, 50 years, it's been a slow boil of like, there's a tent over there, a broken down RV over there. Okay. You know, someone complained about it. Maybe or maybe not. They'll enforce getting rid of it. And it's just slowly succumbed to this city of trash, basically.
Well,
it's a city of trash.
It's another example, too, of a city that's been run by liberal Democrats for decades. And what happens... You know, this is what you get.
It's what you get.
And
when you're going to vote these people in over and over, this is what's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad.
And I know that, you know, saying something like that kind of makes me sound like a Republican, which I'm not. But
no.
That kind of socialist mentality, it we've seen through history, it kind of ends in the same place every time.
It does. It ends in a dystopia.
Yeah.
So before we move on to our next section, I just wanted to quickly squeeze in, like, the Trump administration and, you know, I really was expecting them to take action and CHOP. What do you think?
Well, so Trump is Republican.
Yep.
And a lot of people have, you know, all through when he was running and they've talked to like he was a Democrat a lot of times. But, you know, from a Republican perspective, the federal government doesn't have a right to step in that case unless the state asks for help. And so, in my opinion, he did what his party line says you should do if you're president, which is stay out of the state's business.
That's true.
So,
I had mixed feelings about it because I felt like normally, yes, that's the case. But since CHOP was declaring to be a different country and that it was an autonomous zone, it was almost like a terrorist attack. And even Trump said that Antifa is now a terrorist organization. So I was kind of pissed that they didn't step in.
Yeah.
But after it all ended, I was happy that they didn't step in.
Yeah.
I'm happy that they didn't.
Right. He could have made that argument and he could have stepped in. And he could have still had a pretty good argument, but
yeah,
I think the fact that he didn't will help him in this election cycle.
It will, and that might have been a political move to not step in.
Yeah,
because he did tweet, I guess, that if the city can't get it under control, that they will step in, and they never did. I don't know. It was just a little bit misleading to me. It's like, okay, if you're going to label Antifa as a terrorist group, then you need to follow through and treat them like terrorists, or you just don't label them like that. Because if you tell me someone's a terrorist, then they need to be dealt with like a terrorist, you know?
Right.
However, Antifa is not a terrorist group according to history. Antifa is just a response to fascism. And they're technically not a group at all. So right. I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's a big important part of our, you know, our president's reaction to the whole thing. I think paid off in the end.
Yeah, I think it is going to help him the way he handled it.
I agree.
That decision will also attract moderates from the left who are not going to be able to vote for Biden.
Yeah.
You know, it will give giving Seattle the chance to handle its own affairs and allow these people to protest and get their word in is going to appeal to the moderate left.
That is true. And I don't know. I just feel like, why would they choose such a weak candidate to go against Trump? I feel like Biden is a weak candidate.
Oh,
you know?
My God.
He's so weak.
There's only one way Trump loses. Trump's got to fuck it up for himself. It's the only way he loses.
Yeah. Something's got to come out, or something big would just really have to happen. And I mean, a lot of big things have been happening this year. This is a really freaking weird year. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't think he's pushed the limit yet to not getting elected against Biden.
Not against Biden. And you're right. I don't know what they're thinking putting him up.
I don't know.
It's almost as if they're saying, look, Trump, obviously behind closed doors, Trump has done a pretty good job these last 4 years, right?
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to beat him. There's just nothing we can, there's no platform we can run against him on. Maybe we should just focus on 2020 or 2024.
Well,
like they've given up this year.
It seems like it, choosing Biden as a candidate. I mean, oh my God. But you know what? I really do think that Bernie would have won it.
I think.
What do you think?
Well, I think Bernie had a hell of a lot better chest than Biden.
Hell yeah.
I mean, there's just no way he can get elected. I don't see. I mean, okay. Just speaking to Democrats. Listen, if you're going to vote for Biden, you better be paying real good attention to who his vice president is.
Yeah.
Because that's the one
who's
that's
probably going to be. Exactly. That's the one who's probably going to be leading the country.
Right.
Behind the curtain. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a whole series of shows in itself.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I just kind of had to bring it up because, you know, we're so close to this election and with everything going on and Trump's response to CHOP and everything. I mean, this time is going to go down in history so hard. Like, it's going to be it's going to write several history books. Tomes of books within the past 7 months of our country. And our world, for that matter.
Yeah, you know how when we studied history in high school, or I don't remember if they did this in high school or if it was college, but they separated history. It was post-Civil War and pre-Civil War, two different history classes. They'll probably add a third history class, which will be like post 2020.
Yeah. You know? 2020 was the pivotal year to change the direction of the entire world. And I can't say that I'm really keen on the direction we're going, but like you said, that's another episode entirely.
Yeah.
I just want to give a quick shout out to the Anchor Podcast platform. We really love using this platform because it's completely free. You can create your podcast directly from your phone or your desktop, and Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard all over the internet and on popular platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast, all those big ones. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
One thing that's been, a term that's been getting thrown around very loosely lately is that these people that occupied Seattle are a bunch of anarchists. And for me, I grew up, I was a young teenager in the 90s, and anarchy was like very in. It was very cool. It was a bunch of punks with, you know, the safety pins everywhere and the mohawks and the A spray painted on the back with the circle around it. And, you know, you go to these punk shows and everyone's doing drugs and beating each other up, rowdy. Mm-hmm. And it had always been my thought that anarchy meant chaos, just because that was a generation I was raised in. And I'm pretty sure, like, the majority of Americans have a misconception of what anarchy really is.
Yeah, for sure. And that's been done intentionally. Government wants you to think that anarchy is chaos and mayhem. They want people to believe that there is no way they could survive without government.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime things like this happen, you get political types talking about anarchy in the streets and saying, using that as a pejorative. And so, the idea of anarchy has nothing to do with chaos or violence, even aggression.
And I find that interesting because, I mean, that's so counterintuitive, you know, because we've all been saying it. I just said it. I'm like, there's anarchy in the streets and in Seattle. And I use that word in a negative light. And then I met you and you are a self-proclaimed anarchist, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make that clear. So you are an anarchist, and when you first told me that, I was like, I guess I don't know what that means. At first, I was a little taken in a bit of a shock, like, oh, you're an anarchist, you know?
Yeah, that's but usually then, how it hits most people.
Yeah, of us uninformed ones. But then it got me thinking, do I even know what anarchy is? Because I think we've just been manipulated by basically government entities to just discredit anarchy as something very negative and chaotic, but it isn't. So what is anarchy in a nutshell?
Anarchy in a nutshell, the word means no rulers. And so that's what it is in a nutshell. And I can understand where people could get to mayhem and chaos from that very narrow description, because we've all been raised to think that the only reason we're not running around killing each other all the time is because government exists. But just because there are no rulers doesn't mean there would be no rules in society. We all operate under rules, even when government doesn't make the rule for us. Like, for example, the vast majority of us choose not to murder people because we all know it's wrong, not because the government has said there's a rule against murdering people. Like, we just don't do that. We inherently know that's not right. So if there were no rulers, that doesn't mean that societies wouldn't form without, you know, there would always be a structure and rules because we intuitively know what things are right and what things are wrong. And there are always going to be people that choose to do wrong things.
But in general, I would say the anarchist holds the belief that humans are generally good-natured.
Yes.
And I believe that. Yeah. I believe that humans are generally good-natured.
Right.
You know.
And I would even go so far as to say that some of the problems that we have in our society with psychopathic behavior, sociopathic behavior, those have been fueled by the existence of government, which can be a whole nother topic I won't get into now. But
you know, I could see that. They're shaping psychopaths.
Right.
Just like fascism shapes anti-fascists, the government's rule is shaping psychopathic behavior. I could totally see that.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
And so anarchy, although there are many little versions of anarchy that in the anarchy community, there are disagreements about what the best kind of anarchy is, which to me is kind of silly, because anarchy basically says, well, you get to do what you want anyway. So if you want to form a community which is communistic in nature and it's voluntary, well, I'm okay with that. Go, you know, have a blast. I might come visit sometime, you know, but anarchy really is about the non-aggression principle and consent. So everything in my life has to be a voluntary act. If you've coerced me in any way to act in a way I don't want to act, or to not allow me to act in a way that I want to act, as long as I'm not hurting anybody, you've done something immoral, not me. And it doesn't matter to me what it is. Like, if I want to do heroin, I ought to be allowed to do heroin.
Okay.
If I want,
as long as you're not hurting others or if I want coercing to, anyone else to use heroin around you.
Right. If I want to rob my neighbor to pay for my heroin addiction, then that's when I've done something wrong. I have broken the non-aggression principle by stealing someone else's property.
I see. So basically, anarchy is do what you want within the realm of not hurting others in the process. Do what you want, but you are not allowed to hurt others, take from others, or be violent.
Yeah. And, you know, that can get sticky too. Because it's another one of those situations where you've got to think it all the way through, take it, you know, ride the turtles all the way down kind of thing, because someone can say, you've harmed me because, you didn't wear a mask and you have COVID and now I've got COVID. So someone is going to say, you harmed me. Well, the other side of this coin is that you have to take responsibility for yourself. So if you're concerned about getting COVID, you shouldn't force other people to wear masks. You should stay the hell home.
Yeah. Okay.
So
interesting.
Freedom, the opposite side of freedom is responsibility. You have to take responsibility for everything that happens to you. And you know, me personally, I take it further than most people, my responsibility. I say to myself, listen, if I get mugged on the street by some thugs, it was a bad decision to be on that street. And I take responsibility for it. Whereas most people would say that was the thug's fault, which is fine. Both of those arguments fall within anarchy to me, because the thug is the person breaking the non-aggression principle, whether I blame myself for being there when I shouldn't have, you know, or not.
Well, it seems like a very simple concept that can get very complex as situations arise and people aren't always good-natured. So you really have to be very conscious of your actions that you're taking at the moment.
Yeah.
I could see that being an easy slip-up.
Yeah, and it's tough to be consistent in your views. Because
for everybody,
yeah,
for everybody, like we talked about,
right? Because there are so many different variables and so many different situations you can find yourself in, and especially if you know, when you start playing the what if game, oh my gosh, I can make up all kinds of, you know, I can come up with kinds of examples where I would have a tough time deciding whether or not to use violence.
Well, and I think the what if situation is like the demise of like human consciousness. Because you can what if yourself to death.
Sure.
And that's what people do. Like if someone has a great business idea or they have something that they want to do so badly, and then they sit there and what if themselves to death. What if this happens? What if that happens? Well, what if a frog had a glass ass?
Right.
It would only jump once.
That's right.
So, you know, I could see you what ifing yourself all the way down into the rabbit hole. But the essence is there. You know, the simplicity is there and the elegance is there.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you can put it into action, that's where you get tested on your beliefs.
Yeah, so I say all that to say that what happened in Chaz was not anarchy. You can't claim to be an anarchist, really, under almost any banner of anarchy. You can't claim to be an anarchist and then kill people for no reason, destroy property.
Well, you can't take over a city block, right? You can't take over a city block in the name of anarchy because you are now coercing your viewpoint onto somebody else, right?
Yeah, the anarcho-communists could make an argument. They could say that through the law of first principle, they could claim they had a right to do that. So it basically says, you know, you built this public building with with money that was stolen from people, and we're just taking it back.
Yeah.
You know, so anarcho...
I guess I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that because, you know, we're taxed into oblivion for them to build all these things and have these spaces, and then they go in and take... So that works to an extent, but then they would have had to have just stuck to, like... a city park or a municipal building, as opposed to branching out to businesses and homes and tagging things up. Because, I mean, graffiti is definitely not anarchy.
Right.
And I think that is a complete misnomer. Because when I think of anarchy, I think of the A spray painted, you know. And you feel that is... You would feel that anarchy and graffiti go hand in hand, but technically you are now defacing someone's property, and that is... violating the non-aggression principle, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
And so if you're an anarcho-communist, you can make that argument somewhat. I mean, it falls apart when you go a little deeper into the other things that anarcho-communists believe, but almost all versions of anarchy would say everything about what happened in Chaz was not anarchy.
Interesting. Which is completely opposite of what people know anarchy to be.
Right.
And not just liberals or Democrats or Republicans, but literally, like, everybody is completely misinformed on what anarchy really is.
Yeah, the government school system has done a really good job defining what they want you to think anarchy is.
Yeah, because even when you hear the word, it gives you a negative vibe, like, because that's what we have been systematically trained to have.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So... I can see anarchy working on a small scale, like on a personal scale, you know. I could see it maybe working in a commune situation or a very small community.
Mm-hmm.
But can anarchy work on a large scale? Could it work in a city? And has it ever worked in the past? Is there any instances of anarchy being applied to a large population?
Yeah, so the best examples of anarchy working are really... societies like Native American Indians. A lot of Native American tribes had anarchical structures.
That would make sense.
For example, if you were a member of a tribe and you didn't like how the tribe was being run, you were free to leave the tribe. Like nobody, like there was no hard feelings. You leave the tribe, you go find some other tribe to live with. You weren't imprisoned for, you know, doing stupid stuff. Everything was voluntary in a lot of those structures. Not all of them were that way, but in a lot of those tribe structures, things were voluntary. Nobody was forced to do things they didn't want to do or kept from doing things that they wanted to do. Again, aside from non-aggression. And so I think it would work. I think there's a lot of different ways that it could work. So
What are some examples of that?
You could have a lot of different societal structures under the banner of anarchy, because all that's really required is for it to be consensual. As long as I can join your society consensually and leave it consensually, then that's okay with an anarchist. Like if you want to say, we're going to go over here and we're going to form this company, this society, and we're going to base it on the American structure. But we kind of like the idea of slavery, so we're going back to slavery. But you have your choice to join it or not. You know, I'm okay with that. I don't think you're going to get many people excited to come join your society.
Well, and then slavery itself is forcing someone to do what they don't want to do, unless they chose to be a slave. And some people would.
Well, there are lots of examples where people choose slavery. I mean, in my opinion, America chooses slavery now. They just don't realize
it's an invisible hand of slavery through taxation, through forcing people to have to work. I mean, you're totally right. It's through debt.
Well, and
it is a debt slavery. Yeah. I've held that opinion for a long time.
And there were And there were slaves in America that were against abolition.
They were.
You know, there were slaves that turned in runaway slaves. Which is mind-boggling, really, but...
Very unpopular opinion, but also very misunderstood.
Yeah.
So, I get the concept of anarchy. I like the concept of anarchy. I think most people would probably agree with anarchy and say they're an anarchist if they really knew what anarchy was. It's a little hard for me to wrap my brain around how anarchy would work in a large scale, but I could see it almost... It'd be more of an organic way of living. Maybe more kind of patchwork as opposed to, you know, having like the United States of America. There'd be a lot more sovereignty, a lot more closed loop systems. So you get way less points of failure, I think.
Yeah. And I think if we ever moved in the direction of anarchy, how it would start out is a bunch of different types of societies would emerge. Automatically.
That'd be so interesting.
And then over a long period of time, the most successful ones would grow because people would move to where things were going really well.
Yeah. Interesting.
And so...
So over time, there would be consensus probably on a larger scale, but in the beginning, it would probably take quite a while for that system to emerge.
Right. That's how I see it, you know. And all the things that we think today that we have to have government for can be done privately.
Well, yeah. Okay. So like roads, like I always hear the argument of, well,
sure,
if
yeah,
we didn't have
government,
advocate. We didn't have government, we're not going to have our roads. And I felt this way for a long time. And so if we were in an anarchist society, how would our roads get done?
Okay. Well, let's start the conversation like this. Were there roads before the United States?
Yes.
Yes.
There's roads since the dawn of man.
Right.
Yeah.
We've always had roads because we need roads because we travel. Of course, we're going to have roads.
But our roads are more comprehensive now. So, you know, there's moto grading and asphalt and paint. And so how could these roads exist without the government since we have, you know, our Department of Transportation and, you know, like how would that be possible?
So I don't know how it would happen. Here's what I do know, though. If the market is free, truly free, then if roads are needed, they will be built. There are a lot of goods that travel up and down our highways every day.
Yes.
And so if the government stopped right now, if they just stopped making roads, industry would find a way to make sure it kept happening because it's the only way they stay in business.
Okay. That makes sense.
Or maybe we find that, you know what, we really don't need these massive thoroughfares. Maybe we created these things and it's not as necessary as we thought. And we would find that out if that was the case. All I know is it takes money to build roads and government doesn't produce money in the sense that, you know, it sells something and makes money and now it can buy a road.
Yeah.
It has to steal money from citizens. Then it has the money to buy, to build roads.
Like a middleman.
The other thing is...
The government's a big middleman.
The government doesn't know how to build roads. People who build roads know how to build roads. To say that it wouldn't get done if there wasn't government is, I just think is...
asinine.
I'm not sure I'd go that far, but yeah, it doesn't make sense. If you think it all the way through, government doesn't build roads.
People
who know how to build roads.
And those are...
The people who want those roads get those roads built. So, for example, there are states where the roads are much shittier than other states.
Oh, trust me, I know. We travel for a living, so yeah. I've been all over. And so there's... Literally, you'll cross a state line and you'll go from a beautiful road to just the worst road ever. And then you cross another state line and you're back on a beautiful road. I'm like, what is going on here?
Right. And there's government, and then there's government in all those places.
Yep.
So the difference is not whether or not government builds roads. The difference is whether or not the people in those jurisdictions demand that roads get built.
True.
So it's when there's a will, there is a way. And if people wanted roads, whether there was government or not, there would be roads.
Well, and if Walmart wants people to shop at their store and to move right across country and government's not building roads, Walmart is going to form some sort of coalition with other companies like Target, Lowe's, to build the dang roads.
Yeah. And that's just one example of, in with our imaginations, we can think of how it could get done. But the way that it could get done, those possibilities are endless.
It does not require.
We don't even know.
Yeah. Interesting.
And you also have things like people think that the government has to have monopoly on the court system.
Yeah, of course.
Which I think we would be much better off if there was competition in the court system.
Yeah.
But it's even hard for us to imagine anything but a monopolized court system. Like, how would that even work, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, so right now we have private adjudication. It already exists. You know, there are, with a lot of companies, when you sign a contract with them, you're basically signing that if there is a disagreement, you're going to handle it through arbitration. That is,
that's true.
That's private adjudication. That is not the federal court system or the state court system or the city court system. That is private adjudication. So it already exists and it actually works better. It's cheaper.
It does.
It's more effective. That's why companies put it in their contracts, because it's a better way to solve disputes. And if
it's
simpler,
cleaner, easier, cheaper.
Right. So,
yeah.
You know, and if there were lots of these, say, arbitration companies, and they're all competing to be the company that gets used in contracts, the systems would get even better and better and better and less expensive. Because that's what open market does. That's what free market does. It makes things better, cheaper, more efficient all the time, every time.
And that's so anti-government, because they just want it to be more robust, more complex, so they can tax the shit out of us and squeeze more money out of the system.
Right.
And secure their jobs, basically.
Yeah.
So I could see why they would want to completely smear what anarchy really is, because it's a much better, efficient system that they don't want.
Right.
They just don't want it.
Right.
And you know what a system I think would really benefit from anarchy is our education system.
Oh, absolutely.
An anarchist education system would be awesome.
Right. And
because instead of having this very dogmatic, almost a prison-like education system that we have now, it'd be free will to be educated.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I want to learn to be a potter. That's what I want my profession to be. Well, a potter teacher will arise out of that because there is a need for that. And there's a, you know, it's a free market. And now we have an experienced potter teaching people how to be potters.
Right. And with the internet nowadays, it would be just so easy to implement.
Yeah.
Implementation would take like 3 weeks to fully implement free education across the country. I mean,
oh, totally.
And it already exists in lots of forms. You know, if I want to, like, for example, I'm trying to learn how to code now. Well, I'm not going to a university to learn that. I'm not paying
$60,000.
Yeah. The, you know, the government, I'm not even sure the government cares whether I learn that or not. You know, that's not part of their curriculum that's a whole different deal, but you know, I'm just online and I'm finding the guy that knows how to code and he's got some courses, and you know, I've even found them, they're free, like I don't even have to pay.
Yeah. But then if you wanted to pay, that's your choice.
Absolutely.
You could pay for, you know, because there's like Udemy and, you know, there's lots of coding academies online.
Right.
Where if you wanted a more structured, comprehensive thing, then you pay, but that's your choice.
Right.
Whereas now, you know, the public school system, I mean, it's just so bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. And like, here's how
I feel so guilty for sending my daughter through the public school system.
Oh, yeah.
If there's one thing I could redo in life is I would have homeschooled her now that the forest for the trees. But you know what? Even back then, it wasn't as bad. But now it's just, it's gotten so bad. It's so bad.
Well, it's gotten so bad now that teachers are saying it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, the teachers are telling us how terrible it is now. So now you know it's bad. But.
Oh, it's bad. It's basically a minimum security prison system.
Yeah, it's a day prison.
Where they are teaching children to be good, little, unquestioning, non-critical thinking worker bees that's going to work at the Walmarts, that's going to work at the grocery stores to keep the system churning and not question anything.
Right. That's
they don't
exactly
teach taxation. They don't teach economics. Like, they do not teach the real world shit that people need to know, and we all realize this.
Yeah. I think the pushback for a lot of these things, and especially education, the pushback comes from, so as an anarchist, you can form whatever kind of school you want to form, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times where people feel like they've got shit figured out and everybody ought to do it their way, you know? And so, like, liberals hate private Christian schools, you know, they just think they're terrible. Well, you know, that's not your, it's first of all, it's not your say what someone else believes. And if they're a Christian and if they want to raise their children and give them an education that is based in Christianity and heavily theistic, well, you know, it's none of your business.
It's none of their business.
But most people don't feel that way when they have a strong belief about something. They feel like everybody should do it this way.
Yeah, they're forcing their beliefs upon others, which we're seeing happen at an alarming rate these days.
Right, which is what happened.
And if you disagree...
Which is what happened in Chaz.
Yeah, if you disagree with these people, you are the criminal, just to disagree.
Right.
People are losing their YouTube channels left and right because they disagree with popular opinion.
And I'm not even sure it's the popular opinion, but we could get into that too. I think it's the loudest opinion.
Not. It's the loudest opinion. It's the most, it's the opinion that's backed by dollars.
Right.
Oh, yeah, man. I think that's right. We could go way, way down this way. But I guess on a final closing note, you mentioned something to me, and I guess I didn't really understand it. And that is that voting is violent.
Yes.
And I don't understand what that means.
Okay.
But I bet you have a really good explanation.
Yeah, there's several different ways to look at it. But the simplest is just me and my neighbor, we both get to vote, and I vote for a candidate that I like because he's going to run the country the way I think it ought to be run. Mm-hmm. And so I vote for him. Well, the only way that my candidate can do any of the things that I think he ought to do is to tax people.
Yeah.
Nothing happens until he's collected taxes. And then he can implement the programs I want him to implement. And it doesn't matter what it is. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, Republican, Democrat, Libertarian. It doesn't matter. Because basically what I'm saying is, look, I want you to go to my neighbor. I want you to take 20% of his income. And then I want you to spend it the way I want it spent. Now, that sounds, on paper, that doesn't sound too bad. You know, most people voted for this guy, and so that's what ought to happen. But where it's wrong, first of all, is the taxation, because it's theft. But more than that, the violence is my neighbor disagrees, and he refuses to pay his taxes. So now he's going to have to go to jail. They're going to come, and they're going to lock him up.
Yeah, what's going to happen when he refuses?
Right.
Yeah.
So when the cops come to his door to take him to jail, if he refuses, and if he refuses to give his consent to go to jail long enough, he's going to die from it. So
they're going to
kill him. Yeah. You can't resist the cops forever.
No.
And sometimes you'll,
especially when it comes to money, when it comes to government and money.
Yeah.
They're like, they don't hold back. If you're withholding your money, if you are not paying your taxes, you're looking at several years.
Yeah.
Tax evasion.
Yeah.
That's worse than committing a murder practically.
Right. And if you don't comply, they're just going to kill you. And of course that applies for everything. If I get pulled over on the side of the road for speeding and the cop wants to put me in the back of his cop car for just a few minutes while he searches my car, if I refuse to allow that to happen, I will end up dead if I don't eventually consent.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're going to run into a cop who has a really long fuse and he's going to fuck around with you for a really long time. And then other times you're going to, you know, have a cop that he's not going to fuck around for very long.
Yeah, it's true. He's not going to take much. It wouldn't take him much to take violent action.
Right.
So the gist of it is voting is violent because we have Joe who votes Democrat. We have John who votes Republican. Republican gets in, spends Joe's money on things that Joe does not agree with, which is against his will.
Right.
He chooses not to spend the money. He chooses to stop paying taxes. The police come to arrest him for not paying taxes, and he resists arrest, and now he is dead.
Right.
Because they're going to kill him because he's going to resist arrest.
Right. Which is the main reason.
That's interesting.
If people are honest, that scenario is the reason they pay their taxes.
Yeah.
Because everybody bitches about paying taxes.
For fear.
Well, almost everybody. The majority of people bitch about paying taxes. They don't like paying their taxes. But why do they do it? Because they don't want to go to jail.
But we've been so conditioned to pay taxes that if you ask someone what their biggest bill is, they will say rent or food.
Yeah, they don't even.
But the reality is our biggest bill is taxes. And I mean, they're taking like 30% plus.
Yeah, plus. Absolutely. So
it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That is interesting, though, because I could see the systemic way that voting is violent. And I don't think I would have ever personally gotten there. But
yeah.
With you explaining it, I get it.
Well, so you can look at it this way, too, which is easier for some people to get in this scenario. So you and me are walking down the road and there's a homeless guy and I say, you know, I'm going to help this guy out, and I give him $5. And then I turn and look at you, and I'm waiting for you to give him $5 also. And you just stand there like you're not going to give him $5. Hmm. Now, is it okay for me to beat you up to make you give him $5?
Yeah.
No. But for some reason, if there's a group of us, if there's 10 of us, and it's the same situation, and we all take a vote, and six of us say it's okay to beat you up to force you to give him $5. For some reason in society, we think that's okay. But it's the same thing.
Yeah. It's that herd mentality.
Yeah. It's because we've...
The wolf pack.
Yeah. It's because we've spread the morality of the act of violence over the group. And so we feel it less personally.
Hmm. Interesting.
But it's no less violent.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It's no less violent, and that happens a lot in, like, murder cases where an innocent individual, a good-natured individual, kind of gets sucked into the group and condones the murder or even participates in it when they never would have as an individual.
Exactly right.
Just like as an individual, if the mayor came up to me and says, I'm taking 30% of your money, whether you like it or not, I'd be like, hell no.
Right.
But since we're all paying 30% in our city, state, country, it's just like, well, that's just the way it is. And we've just come to accept it, and it's messed up.
Yeah.
And we can't back out. We cannot choose to not participate.
Right. And, you know, another argument is that, well, if you don't like it, just leave. Well, that's not possible for a lot of people. Like me, for example, I don't have, the documents for entering a country. Passport.
Like a passport.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't
You don't have a passport.
I don't have a passport. And so They're
but
not
then you're just going to end up in another country. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. They're not going to let me leave for one. But yeah, where you were going is right too. You just end up in another place that has the same structure.
Yeah. Because it is the modern structure that's prevalent all over the world.
Yeah.
Except you mentioned to me that there's one like area that is actually under anarchist rule. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. There's this place called Lieberland, and yeah. it's really an interesting concept, which is kind of like what I was talking about earlier, where if we were given the opportunity to let anarchy happen, all kinds of different things would pop up. There would be, you know, there's mm-hmm. people with lots of different ideas of how to run consensual societies, but this place
would be very creative.
Yeah. Yeah. This place, Lieberland, is they've claimed a piece of land that is not claimed by any other country. There's like this undisputed piece of property between two countries, and I don't remember which ones they are, but it's a small chunk of land. But they have been forming their own community, and it's based sort of like this. You can become a citizen of Lieberland if you like, and this is the tax structure, which mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the structure of it is, but I know how it functions. So you can agree to pay this amount of taxes, or you can agree to pay these amount of taxes. It's your choice. Or you can agree to pay no taxes, but the taxes are like a stock. So the more taxes you pay, the more portion, the larger portion you own of this structure of government that is going to share its GDP.
Oh, wow.
So it's
that's interesting. Yeah, it's like a dividend.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's like an investment.
It's structured like a corporation with shareholders.
That's badass.
But see, if I don't want to be a shareholder, that's okay. I can still live there. I don't have to pay taxes. I just don't get the benefits of the dividends.
Yeah, but it's encouraging
yes.
taxation because you are going to reap from it.
Right. And so it's a really interesting concept, and you can find it if you just Google Lieberland or YouTube Lieberland. There's stuff out there about it. It's really fascinating. But it's an anarchical structure.
Huh.
So.
Yeah. So I guess there is one place you could go in the world.
Right.
If you wanted to leave here.
Right. And so, you know, one of their stated purposes is to be able to give people traveling documents so that they can go from one country to another without being a citizen of a country that they don't want to be part of.
So they'll issue traveling documents there.
Yeah. So I think they haven't got this completely finished yet, because in order for a passport to work, you have to be able to get it accepted by other countries. And so that's the tricky part. They're trying, you know, they've established diplomatic offices in a lot of different countries already. So it's interesting. Wow. I need to check in on that to see how far it's come, because it's been a couple of years for me.
Interesting. Yeah. I'd like to follow up on Lieberland.
Yeah.
I might want to visit there.
Right.
Well, I feel like we've covered a lot, and I think this may be a good time to close the episode.
Yeah, for sure. This is a long one.
Well, I hope that all of our listeners have enjoyed our episode and kind of our viewpoints and the knowledge, and we'd really love to hear back from you. You can email us at theoffgridoutpost@gmail.com. Any thoughts or questions or comments you had, and we might feature them on the next episode.
Engagement from the audience would probably be the best thing.
That's what I want to hear, because we're all about free speech. Where everyone else in this dang world seems to be going the opposite way of free speech. I'd love to hear if you had a differing opinion. I love debate. I don't feel the need to be agreed on, you know?
Yeah, I would actually rather hear from you if you disagree with me.
Although I'm happy to hear support too. Yeah. Plus, I'd like to just know, you know, if you enjoyed the show. If you even emailed us and said, "Hey, we really enjoyed your show. Like, we're looking forward to the next one." I'd be okay with that. Or you can hate on us. Whatever you want, really.
Yeah.
We're anarchists. We take it all.
That's right. Or you can let us know what you would like us to talk about. You know, that'd be awesome too. Give us some show ideas.
Yeah. For sure.
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, this is Regina signing out, and I hope you can come back next time.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next time. Talk at you later.
The end.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, don't forget to subscribe to the show and get new episodes as soon as they're released.